Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. DA got that dope.
You already know my protocol. I wouldn't say they greedy, but they come back for more.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Fantasy CBB Super Show, presented as always by RotoCurve. I am your host, Walter Waddell, a.k.a. Dub Deuces 85. Wrapping up the end of January 3rd, 2020. Big slate tomorrow. Football is winding down. There's some juicy NFL two-game slates, if that's your thing. CFB is just about done, thank God. Bowl season has been super random as always, and we're ready to fully dive into basketball season and get some of that football money over here, because I think we're all getting tired of beating on each other, regulars in the same contest every single night, 2v2 every single night because of DraftKings pricing. It's just getting a little tiring, so it'd be nice to get some fresh blood in there and, play some different people once in a while. And also the CBB variance this year has been really, really high and compared to recent years. There's just guys who are, for lack of a better term, and sorry if you're listening with your kids here on demand, shitting the bed. There's guys that should not be having these types of games or situations like tonight with Quentin Grimes, who I thought might be a little sneaky. I thought he would do really well, and he sat on the bench for a long time, and that was super annoying and unexpected. Coach Sampson was not having it tonight, though. He benched Caleb Mills about a minute 35 into the game for a good 10 minutes after back-to-back turnovers. He was extremely pissed off. I didn't play my boy Nate Hinton, which is the second night in a row on my main squad. I didn't play somebody who I always play every slate. Of course, the night before was Isaiah Stewart, who I had on late slate. But not my main, and Onyeka Okongwu, double O as we affectionately call him over in our Slack chat. So I'm just not going to make that mistake. I think matchup or not, I'm just gonna play Walter's guys. Everyone gives me a hard time about Walter's guys. But you know what? When I play my guys, they do well, so I'm going to go back to doing that. Forgive me, Nate Hinton, for not having your 2% 50 game today. Will not make that mistake again. But the fact that variance is so high, it's hard to find guys who are can't miss or safe. You hear the term cash safe a lot, or high floor. I don't know if that exists right now. Looking at this slate tomorrow, a couple of names stick out that I think are going to be rather safe. Lamar Stevens, Devin Dotson, Precious Achiuwa. Those are all guys I think should hit 4X rather easily, but as we know, fouls could happen, injuries could happen, random benchings, 0-for-11, myriad of things could happen. So I don't even want to jinx people by calling them safe, but a nice 10-game slate on DraftKings. There are three games on FanDuel that are not included on DraftKings for this particular slate. We're back to having multiple slates. There's an afternoon on DraftKings and a late, which is nice. Typically, those afternoon and late slates don't have as many regulars, if you will, in them. I think people get a little burned out, or they're spending time with family, or they have stuff to do. They're not degenerating it up like some of us. You can really find a lot of head-to-heads, winner-take-alls, different double-ups, things of that nature, with names that maybe you don't recognize. So if you don't play the later slates, I would definitely encourage you to. I want them to fill, so they make them bigger. If you want to call and be a part of the show, the number to do that is 515-602-9782. We'll be here for the next hour or so talking about the games. Feel free to call in if you're listening live. Also, RotoCurve content. If you want to go to rotocurve.com/college-basketball, we have weekly rates, monthly rates, and rest of the season rates going on right now. Very interactive Slack chat. Different people are in there, like Handron and a couple of other regulars. Very, very good information. We have all the injury news on there. Right up to the minute, Geo Baker was ruled out very late tonight. We still have some ownership on both sides, and we broke that info real quick as soon as it comes in. So you never miss any of that info being in the Slack chat. I know some people reach out to me on Twitter and Discord and other avenues, and I try my best to answer those, but if you want 100% guarantee never to miss info, the Slack chat is where you want to be. All right, we do have a caller before I jump into the slate here, 920. Who is this? Who we got on the line tonight?
It's Razzle.
Oh, hey, what's up, man? I knew that. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm all right. It's been a long time. I feel like we haven't talked in like 2 weeks or something.
Yeah, it feels like that for sure.
I know. You sent me the affectionate message that you need some Walter time. So let's have some Razzle and Walter time. I don't know how much you've gotten a chance to look in this slate here. Let me ask you also, do you agree that it seems, you know, I'm never one to admit or say like, oh, this is random, DFS is random, you know. I never want to admit that, but does it feel like this, especially the last like 3 or 4 weeks, that college basketball has been on the high variance side? Random's kind of a taboo word in DFS, but it seems like the variance has been a lot higher than previous seasons. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, especially recently. There's been some interesting, like, below-floor type games from guys that we just never thought would end up with, like, below 20 fantasy points, and they're not even getting into the teens in some spots. And I don't know. I've been trying to figure it out over the last 10 days what's been kind of going on DK-wise, and I think it's just a combination of getting some of these four games with other guys stepping up on teams, but then also the DK pricing has gotten a bit tougher too overall. I say that, and then we're going to have some value come up for tomorrow, of course, but overall I think the DK pricing has gotten tougher.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I have friends I talked to that said that, you know, the pricing may end up like college football DK pricing, where they kind of group everyone in these tiers and almost effectively eliminates the middle tier. And it didn't really seem like that, but it is starting to feel that way, because you know you've got anyone who's capable of hitting 30 or more is like 7, 8 to 9K, and if they have a bad game, like Jaden McDaniels, obviously had a really bad game yesterday, but the game before that he had like 14, and he only dropped $100 on DraftKings, whereas on FanDuel, where I had a lot, he was 6K. So it's like DraftKings pricing is just, I don't know if their algo is not registering properly, or they have someone manually just saying, no, this guy is an average of 33 fantasy points, so I don't care, he had 14 and a 6 yesterday, he's only going to be 7,500, whereas he should drop under. And I think that's part of the problem, is guys are having bad games and they're just not dropping if their average is at this amount. And then, you know, you've got guys who, like Ibby Watson, who have a really big game, and then on the flip side, they don't change. They're still 4 or 5 regardless, because of I don't know if it has to do with average. Obviously, he's not like a super lock all the time when he's on the slate, but coming off that 30 or 40 he just had, you would think in the old days he was raising price, and Jaden McDaniels would come down. And it just seems like they're not changing it as much. So I think that might be why we're experiencing these busts, like you said, and there's slates like that seem like they should be really high scoring, and they just haven't been, today especially. Tomorrow won't be that. I mean, tomorrow's going to be really high scoring, because there's at least 3-4 guys under 4K that are almost cash, reasonably can be in your cash lineups, and if they go off, then it's going to be a really high-scoring slate. So this one might be a little different, more like last year's DK, but overall, yeah, it's been super frustrating. Or today with Houston, with, you know, Quentin Grimes, who I thought was a sneaky player, or last Devin Dotson game, he ended up getting to 30 fantasy points, which was fine, but against Stanford, I think we all thought, or especially me, thought he was going to hit like 40, and he was really bad for the first half. And it's just those type of games are frustrating. And it's funny, because, you know, I'm the ultimate tilter. I always say, oh, it's over 5 minutes in, but now I'm getting a chance to kind of relax and sit back and then watch my chat or other people. You know, at the 15-minute mark of the first half, people are saying, oh, I can't handle it, Timmy Allen's a bust. And then Timmy Allen goes to have 44 fantasy points, you know? It's like, okay, let's not get too freaked out a little bit here. So it's kind of funny, because I can kind of sit back and see everyone tilting now. I feel like I started a tilting revolution, so proud of that. Let's jump into the first game here, Maryland versus Indiana. Ken Pom has a 74-67 in favor of Maryland. Both similar in tempo ranking, 162 for Maryland, 168 for Indiana. I was a little too afraid. One of my Slack users, Jeff Buckets, so he's in our Dynasty League, last game he had brought up a good point, and he saw an article about Chal Mario. He was, you know, returning. Obviously, we know the Mitchells are gone. He was going to be on a minutes cap where they were going to play him, like, you know, in 3 to 5 minute intervals. And I thought, well, it's probably too risky to use him, even though it was just Bryant. And he played 14 minutes, which wasn't a ton. But he ended up getting 15.5 fantasy points, 6 points, 5 rebounds, and assist a block. I understand Indiana's a tougher opponent, but Maryland is at home, and they didn't move Merrill's price at all from 3K. I think for tournaments, you could certainly use him. And I've already talked to a couple people who think, you know, maybe for cash it's not such a great idea. But what he's enabled you to do, and especially as we get to Mississippi State with a really bad pricing error, and then a couple other guys, like for Tennessee, who are really cheap with Turner gone, you can roster 3 of those guys, and then you don't have to take anyone in the mid-tier. You can just roster 4, even 5 guys above 7-5, which theoretically should be okay if Mariel gets 10 minutes and only posts 5 fantasy points, or maybe 2X and gets 6 fantasy points. You should be able to lean on your upper-tier guys to pull you through the rest of the way. Maryland's a really big tilt team. Jalen Smith and Anthony Cowan are guys that always feel like when you roster them, they suck. When you don't roster them, they go off. They're habitual slow starters, so I don't even tilt them anymore. Cowan and Smith will 10 minutes into the game tomorrow, almost certainly have 4 fantasy points, maybe 6. But I don't worry about them usually because they'll come through. And then one of the random guys like Marcel, Wiggins, Ayala, or Scott are going to end up having like a 25 fantasy point game. Trying to peg all that is difficult. The slate's too big for me to really have to deal with Maryland tilt, so I think the only guy I'm really looking at is Chon Mario. At 3K, do you think that he could be used in cash at all, or are you kind of just simply keeping him at your tournaments right now?
I mean, I don't think I can play him in cash. You don't know how many of those minutes last game were just because of the opponent, because he was available against Seton Hall. Now, I know both the Mitchell brothers were there for that game, but he didn't get off the bench for that game at all. So I just don't know. And plus, I think there's other guys that we can go cheap with for cash and be a little safer. But I do understand it for GPPs, but I would rather just be a little safer on minutes that we can kind of predict a little bit better than his. But also the fact that, you know, if he does get 10 to 12 minutes, you know, it's not the easiest of matchups, you know, dealing with Justin Smith and Trace Jackson Davis. You know, there can be definitely some foul issues in those handful of minutes as well. So I think there's just too much risk in using him for cash. But, I mean, you know, when you're able to pair him and Weatherspoon together for GPP lineups, It makes things very interesting, because I just counted there's 19 guys priced in the 7K range and 14 priced in the 8K range. So you have 33 players 7K and up that you can just rotate amongst those two in your lineups, and have a decent shot at taking something down that way too, you know, as long as he plays double-digit minutes.
Yeah, that would be nice, especially if you're doing the multi-entry. And my only, you know, I'm sitting here when I was building before the show and kind of looking at it, I can almost talk myself into just rolling him out. And if I would tell people this, if they do decide to use him in cash or their main teams, because some people don't play cash, but they just have a main team, if you will, don't tilt it. Understand that you're rostering him for what he gets you, not from a point perspective. You're not rostering him thinking I have to get 14 or 15, you know, from him. I got to get 5X or I'm dead. If you feel like you need that from him, then don't roster him and build your lineup differently. But if he allows you to get Devin Dotson or Lamar Stevens or Mike Watkins, who are all guys who have pretty good matchups, and on paper, knock on wood, should do really well 4X plus. You're rostering it for extra guys like that, because if they hit 5 or 6X or Watkins has one of his 50-point games, if Mario has 3 fantasy points, he's pretty irrelevant in the grand scheme of things, unless one of your other guys, you know, nukes down to 12 fantasy points for whatever reason. Because I've had a ton of lineups where, you know, I hit the nuts on 6 of 8, and they all went 5 or 6X plus, and I had a guy who got me 6, and it didn't matter. So understand when I tell you that, you know, you're rostering him for what the other players can bring, not necessarily him. On the Indiana side, you know, Maryland isn't really a a difficult matchup. They've been really uninterested in the first half, so teams can really pile on fantasy points early against them. Trace Jackson Davis, one of those guys in the 8K range, has been pretty solid. I will say on the road, Indiana hasn't been tested as much, and when they were on the road, the game against was it Notre Dame, Jackson Davis did pretty well. He had 31, but he was 8-5 then. It's not really going to get it done at that price, and I do think he'll hit somewhere between 28 and 32 tomorrow, which pretty much pays off his price. But because of the fact that I think it's going to be a higher scoring slate, I don't think he's going to be one of my main guys in that range. I think he's one of the more lower end. As I said, Indiana's just not – they haven't had enough road games to really be able to judge them quite yet. Justin Smith's price has come back down a little bit, 6-4, where he's interesting for tournaments. But, you know, he's literally got a floor of, like, 10 fantasy points. So it's really difficult for me to trust him. And then with all the guards pretty much being, healthy, Devontae Green, Al Durham, Rob Finney, I just don't really like to mess around with them. Finney's 4-6, which is interesting. Joey Bronk down there at 4-7. There's a couple of guys who are cheap, but I just think there are better looking plays for me outside of this game, besides if I want to roll the dice on Mario. Is there anybody here that you feel is you know, potentially a main team play for you, or is it just tournament guys?
It's mostly tournament guys. Marcel probably more on FanDuel because he's under 5K over there. But yeah, I do have some interest in Bronk, but I feel like I'm just gonna chase his points from the last two games, and then I'm gonna get his game against UConn or his game against Wisconsin or something. Just because he needs those rebounds to get there. I think most likely, other than Mariel and maybe some Dante Scott, I'm probably not going to use much from this game.
Yeah, and on FanDuel, I did notice Devontae Green. He does interest me there at 5-4 a little bit. And then Finney's down at 4-2, but you look at his last two games in the single digits, it's, even at 4-2, it's kind of hard to trust him there. But I am looking at Green on FanDuel mostly only. All right, LSU versus Tennessee. Tennessee coming off a really atrocious game. Their first game without Lamonte Turner, they looked like complete ass. KenPom has a 71-68 for Tennessee. I don't know if that's that's baking into the fact that they don't have Turner. I don't foresee them beating LSU personally. They're 312th in the tempo ranking, LSU 66. For Tennessee, I was all over Triple J, Josiah Jordan James last late that they were on. He definitely let us down. Price did not change. This is what I'm talking about with DraftKings. He had a 16, and he stays at 5-6. If he would have had like a 30, he'd probably be 6K right now. It's really weird. He just didn't shoot well. Wisconsin has a good win for them tonight, by the way. They make games ugly. They make games slow. I absolutely hate when they're on the slate now. I don't like targeting against them, even though I think we saw like Caleb Weston have a fine game against them. But they just make games really nasty. So I do give James a little bit of a pass here. But at the same time, I am a little nervous to use him. They're at home. He is getting a pace boost at 5-6. He's definitely somebody I'm considering. But I think he might have to be more on the tournament side for me. I am not afraid to use Devontae Gaines at 3-9. I've had a conversation with Saw earlier this evening, just about an hour before the show. He doesn't think he's a very good basketball player, which is fair. He doesn't shoot that well. But you look at his peripherals, what he does with full minutes, anything over 15. He has a pretty decent steal rate, somewhere between 2 to 4 rebounds and a couple of assists at 4K. He doesn't really need to do a lot to pay that off. He is definitely somebody in that sub 4K range that I personally feel okay about using in cash. You could go down to 3-2 and use Jalen Johnson if you think he's going to continue to get minutes. With Turner gone, those minutes are going to probably hover somewhere between 15 and 20. So for 3-2, he could be somebody that is a potential GPP play. He did get a lot of his stuff against Wisconsin late when the game was out of hand. He had 9-6-2 for 20 fantasy points, and his price went from 3-5 to 3-2. Go figure. So he's in play. You could use, I guess, Oliver Nkemwa at 4K. He had a really bad game, but this matchup on paper against LSU is pretty decent. He had 18 against Wisconsin, and you look before that, it's all single digits. But, again, the minutes should be somewhere between 18 and 20. And he has a really solid rebounding rate and averages right around 5 rebounds per game. So another tournament guy. I don't really ever personally like to use Fulkerson or Pons. Pons eternally burned me so much last year that I never use him. I know he's better this year, but there's really no reason to use him at 6'5", in my opinion, when there's better plays. You can see three of his last four, he's barely been above 18 fantasy points. So he doesn't move the needle for me. Bowden at 6'2 looks like a really nice tournament play because Bowden has legit 40 fantasy point upside. I do think it's going to be a little bit more of an adjustment period than I realized in the first game without Turner because, you know, obviously their point guard, their heart and soul, the kind of catalyst of their offense, leader of their defense. It's a big deal for them to lose him, and they looked really lost. Bowden especially, you know, Bowden was pretty much the Robin to Turner's Batman. So, you know, now that he's kind of going to be the go-to perimeter player, he couldn't facilitate. He couldn't make any shots. He wasn't facilitating at all. He couldn't get a shot off. James and wasn't hitting any shots. So there was really no threat of anyone else. So they just kind of – Wisconsin just really bothered him, and they did a good job. And LSU has the personnel and the defense to also do that about it. So James, Gaines, Pons, all these guys are going to have – Jansen, they're all going to have to hit shots. Otherwise, it's going to be another long day for Bowden. But I do like him for tournaments at 6'2 there. Let's take a look at FanDuel for him. It's probably a little cheaper. 6'2 on FanDuel also. So decent. For LSU side of things, I'm a huge Darius Days fan. I absolutely love the improvement. He's going to be one of the most improved players this year. But, you know, LSU's prices are always up. Skylar May, 7'4", Emmett Williams, 7'2", Smart, 6'8", Days, 6'7", and Watford, 6K. Manning's there at 4'6 for tournaments, but now that Marlon Taylor's back, he's kind of, you know, hit or miss. But LSU runs their starters. Good minutes. They're all usually somewhere between 20 and 35 fantasy points, but there's just not a lot of mispricing going on here. Watford is a really good tournament play with 40 upside, but at 6K, you're kind of paying a premium for him. So Days and Williams, I think, are the two better LSU plays. And then on FanDuel, I think Skylar Mays at 6'9 is probably the best LSU play. What are you doing with this game here? What's the plan with Tennessee and LSU? Because this is probably going to be a good game on paper, but it might be one where we're saying, oh, God, it's 9 to 8, you know, 18 minutes in.
Fantasy point-wise, like, I'm more on the Tennessee side. Like, normally I like LSU quite a bit for fantasy points. But with them going into Tennessee, I'm, you know, in Tennessee, the one getting the pace bump here. I'm going to be on Bowden quite a bit. I just like the fact that he's taking double-digit shots and he's nearing double-digit three-point attempts. Like, you know, all it's going to take is him to get a little hot or just shoot well. He doesn't have to get super hot, and he's going to go off. And we get him at a price drop over, you know, because he's been over 7K for much of the season. So he's up there. I do like your Josiah Jordan James. I think he fits into this game pretty well. And then it's just I have to decide between Johnson and Devontae Gaines. I like Gaines' defensive ability, so he picks up some, you know, stats down on the defensive end, and Johnson's more of the scorer shooter out of those two. But Gaines did take 8 shots in that game against Wisconsin, so he's kind of one of the guys that I think you could end up using cash-wise over a Mariel in the 3K range, just because I think, you know, his minutes are going to be a little more predictable, right, because he slid into the starting lineup. With LSU, I'm probably going to be more on Emmett Williams, maybe some Days, but I just don't like them as much. And that, and I keep getting burned by LSU guys. A lot of times they're having big first halves, and then they call it in the second half, and they just disappear. You know, like Javonte Smart and Emmett Williams have both done recently when they've been on the slate, so... for me, it's definitely just going to be mostly Tennessee in this game because I like the boost that they get.
Yeah, that makes sense. Auburn's guards do that a lot, too, and their forward roulette seems like an SEC thing where teams go ham in the first half and then they kind of fall by the wayside. All right, I agree. You know, Gaines is a guy that right now is leaning for my main builds just because I like right now, I like the three on DK, especially the three value five stud build. We don't get that very often. It's usually, you know, if you're going three value, it's, you know, one's really good and then there's two that are kind of speculative. And then you're getting, you know, some mid-tier guys. So I really like that build. And Gaines' minutes are safe. And I think that, you know, at 3-9 with the pace boost, he should fall into a decent amount of rebounds, assists, maybe a couple steals, to where if he knocks down, you know, two or three jumpers or three, gets like 6 or 7 real points, he'll be way over value, or at least at 4X pretty easily, I think. Oklahoma State versus Texas Tech. This is a game I'm probably not going to be too high on. KenPom has a 68-64 in favor of Texas Tech, 195th in tempo ranking, Oklahoma State 109th. Oklahoma State finally got back to full strength. You know, likely is healthy now. Did play that game on the 29th against Southeast Louisiana State in 20 minutes. He had 20 fantasy points, so, you know, business as usual for him. But Texas Tech, while their defense hasn't been as elite as last year, still pretty decent. You know, they've had games where they've given up some big scores. But ordinarily, I'm not looking to target against Texas Tech on their floor with a kind of a middling team like Oklahoma State. So, and they're all priced, you know, likely 8-1, Waters 7K, Anai 7K, McGriff 5-8. And then you got Disagawa down there at 4-4 if you think it's hot. And then all their value guys are kind of, you know, with likely back, not that appealing to me. So Oklahoma State side of things, I'm not really looking at them. Texas Tech also getting healthy. Jameis Ramsey is back now. It looks fine. 28 fantasy points and 33 fantasy points in the two games that he returns. He's had a couple-day break for the holiday, so he's fine at 8K. Clark at 7.5 is fine. Tyler Edwards at 7.1. Those guys take a little bit of a hit with Ramsey back. Clark still had 30 fantasy points last game with Ramsey back, but he definitely falls less. You know, it's a priority for me at 7.5. I'd much prefer him somewhere in the low to mid 6K range if I'm going to play him with Ramsey. Shannon's there at 5.8. He's been a really steady cash play. If you're going to go opposite of what probably most people are going to do and try to build a more of a balanced line, Shannon is one of those guys that fits in really well for me, as opposed to somebody like Davide Moretti, who's really shooting dependent. Not an exciting game for me. What are you doing with it?
Most likely I'm skipping the game, but I probably will have a share of Diziago and GPPs, probably only on DK just for the three-point bonus. Maybe a share of Anai on DK just because I know he can rack up some blocks. And, you know, those can add up in a hurry and he can end up paying off. And then probably Ramsey. You know, I do like his ability, so this could be a spot where he kind of flashes some upside. But other than that, I think Texas Tech is really just filled with some safer floor guys, not really gigantic ceilings. Partially because they've been priced up, right? Like Moretti at 5,900, Shannon's up to 5,800, Kyler Edwards is 7,100, Chris Clark up to 75 now. You know, even though Clark contributes across the board, he just doesn't do a ton of game point scoring. So he does have that high floor, but I don't know that he can get to a ceiling at 7,500.
Yeah, definitely agree. All right, next game, Georgia versus Memphis. Got the Tom Crean season here. KenPom has it 80-72 in favor of Memphis. They're 10th in tempo ranking, Georgia 38th. So it's a big, fast game, lots of points. Georgia's been a real letdown, which is not unusual. This is kind of who they are. They do this to us every year. Anthony Edwards' price has dropped a little bit to 8.2. He always pops up, and you know, I see people's projections, and I talk to people around the industry, and Edwards is always a guy I get asked about, and I personally just don't roster him. Him and Hammonds, it doesn't really kill me that often to fade. I know Edwards had that one game way back against, was it Michigan State, where he had like 60 fantasy points. He hasn't really done much since then. You know, he had some 30s here or there, but he's kind of just a 20 to 25 fantasy point game, and everyone, you know, is kind of starting to question him. The NBA draft Twitter is starting to question why he's being talked about as a number one pick, and I kind of agree. So I won't be using him. I don't think it's you know, unusual to use him tomorrow. It's fine. He's got the GPAP upside, as he's shown earlier in this year, but he's just not consistent. Hammond, same thing, not really consistent, even though this could be a decent matchup. If it was flipped and he was at home, I'd be more inclined to use him. Our super value guy we've been using for a long time, Tumani Kamara, is finally starting to get priced up a little bit. He's up to 5K on DraftKings now, coming off, you know, about a 32 and a 23. he still should be priced a little bit higher, so I think you can still have shares of him. But I'm a little less inclined to just auto-click him in. Before, it was a no-brainer, regardless of matchup, pace, you know, anything like that. I would just plug him in. Now it's a little bit more of a thought. At 5K, I still like him for tournaments, but I don't know that I'll be using him for my main team because he could very easily pick up some fouls or get into some turnover issues. Being on the road, he's still not immune to being Tom Crean'd, where he just randomly gets benched. So there's some risk there, even at 5K. I know that there's going to be a lot of people still on him because of the price, but just kind of be advised about that. Jordan Harris is starting to kind of round into form a little bit. He's still not getting consistent minutes, but I think he's, you know, it's 16, 11, and 10, so the fantasy points have gone down a little bit, but I've watched two of the last three, and he looks pretty decent when he's out there, so it only should be a matter of time before he starts seeing about 20 minutes or more. You know, he's somebody that they can rely on as a third scorer, too. So I don't mind him for tournaments because there is going to be a game where he just completely breaks out. You're going to want shares. So if Kamara, Harris, for Memphis side of things, they're doing just fine. You know, without Wiseman, people thought they might, you know, kind of fall on their face. Lester Quinones is healthy and contributing right away. DJ Jeffries had a really massive game last game. Precious had a nice game too, but he kind of had a slow start and he was invisible for the first half, had some foul issues, and DJ Jeffries was next man up. He had 40 fantasy points. His price did come down to 5.7, which is a little puzzling. I do want to have some shares of him for tournament purposes, but I own him in Dynasty, and I know as well as anyone that he's got a really yo-yo effect with his fantasy points. He could get 14, he could get 40. So he's really not a cash guy at all, but I certainly like him for tournaments, especially being at home. Precious is one of those guys where when I'm talking about a three-value, five-stud build, he's one of the guys that I want. This is a really nice matchup against the Georgia interior, even though they have Hammonds who can block shots and get rebounds and play decent defense. Overall, the team defense in the interior is pretty low for Georgia. So Precious should come in at, you know, at worst 30 to 32 fantasy points, which is right where you need him to be. But I think this is one of the games where he's going to hit 40-plus. You'll know right away, though, because he has a tendency to either just start off really quick in the first 5 to 10 minutes. He can be up to 18 fantasy points, or sometimes he'll be at like 5 to 6 fantasy points that first 10 minutes. So you'll really know where you're at very quickly with him, I've noticed. Everyone else on Memphis, you know, like Lomax, Quinones, Harris, Bao, those are all playable options in tournaments. I think that you can game stack this. That's kind of coming into popularity again, doing some college basketball game stacking. And I think this is one that you can certainly do. The prices are reasonable on both sides, so you can, you know, run it back with a couple Georgia guys, maybe Kamara. Maybe if you love Aaron Edwards, you run him with Precious, DJ, and Lester, and you know, hope for overtime, or at the very least, both teams in the 80s. So a very nice game to play. It is, let's take a look at FanDuel pricing for this real quick. Precious 7.5 there. Edwards down at 7.1 there. It's kind of start talking to me a little bit more when he's down around 7K. If that happens on DraftKings, I might change my tune. Looking down here, Kamara's 4-1. So on FanDuel, Kamara is still a pretty fat lock at 4-1, in my opinion. What are you doing with this game?
Yeah, I mean, right away I was going to point out Kamara's at 4-1 on FanDuel. I think most likely I'm going to get my exposure to Edwards and Hammonds on FanDuel at their prices rather than on DK. DJ Jeffries, I'm probably only going to play on DK. I don't know that I want to pay $6,500 for him on FanDuel. But I do think you're going to want to have pieces of this game. So I'm with you, and Achua is probably going to be in my main build on both sites. And then, I will have some Quinones and maybe some severe Wheeler as well, being under 5K on DK. I kind of like his floor a bit. He's a young guy, so he does make some mistakes, and he has dealt with some foul issues recently. But I think he should be good for, 19 to 23 fantasy points or so as a cheaper way to get, I guess, a piece of this game on DK, because everybody else is kind of priced up a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I've noticed his performance is starting to normalize a little bit, and that scares me at the same time because we've had that in the past where, you know, Crump or, you know, Hightower, one of these guys that run Georgia last year that would have three or four games together where it's finally safe to go back in the water, and then all of a sudden they play 12 minutes. So I like him for tournaments, so I've noticed that he's looking pretty poised and doing well, especially when Harris was out. Next game here is one that I'm going to be targeting pretty heavily on the Penn State side, Penn State versus Iowa. Ken Pom has a 77-76, so right away we see we've got some OT potential because there is going to be some games that happen in OT, and it's usually the Big Ten. Penn State 37th in tempo this year, very, very fast. Iowa 126. It's so weird and gross feeling that Luka Garza is the highest-priced guy on the slate. He certainly has earned it. He's been having a great season. Last year he was so up and down, and I still despise using Iowa players, but I have to recognize that Garza has, you know, massive stat lines. He hasn't been under 30 fantasy points since, let's see here, November 28th. Oh, he had 22 against SDSU. So every other game besides that, you know, he had 22, which is his worst game. He's been over 30 fantasy points. The last four, he's been over 40. So, you know, he does a little bit of everything, and he's extremely consistent. There is a chance for him to get derailed by fouls, you know, especially being, you know, on the road. I think this is actually not in Penn State's home floor, but they're in Philly, I believe, close enough. I don't know how well their fans are going to travel, but there's definitely risk and concern for Garza at that price to get into foul trouble. Lamar Stevens draws just under 6 fouls per 40. Watkins draws about 4.5. Everybody else somewhere between, you know, 3.5 and 4. So there's risk always on the road. Penn State side of things, again, I mentioned the 3 and 5 type of builds I'm looking at. I'm going to have a lot of Penn State. Lamar Stevens is somebody I've been rostering pretty religiously the last few weeks in my main builds. He rarely lets me down. He does get into some early foul trouble sometimes, but the good thing is he usually is allowed to play through it later in the half, and he doesn't normally pick it up in a second. So let me find some words to knock on real quick. So I like him quite a bit. You know, I don't – maybe he's not going to blow the doors off and hit a 50, you know, a ton of times, but I definitely don't see him going under, like, 35 fantasy points tomorrow. The price is up a little bit at 8-3, but Iowa's been very forgiving. They're one of the worst teams in the paint, even though Garza – you know, does work with block shots and rebounds and defense. Just, again, another team defense that's not good in the paint. Mike Watkins is another guy that I'm looking at. I'm actually considered strongly pairing him with Stevens. I feel like every Penn State slate that I do have Lamar Stevens, I'm always regretting not pairing them. I'm always saying in my chats, why didn't I pair these guys? I wish I could go back and pair them. So I think I'm going to be doing that. Watkins is also a foul risk, and he has these moments where he disappears. And the announcers last game were even talking about that. If he could put together a consistent, you know, game after game, he would be, you know, a Naismith type of player. Naismith, a player of the year, right? Because he does have an 11 floor. And I do have concerns about that. But, you know, he's had 26, 27, 40, and 40 basically the last four. You're really reserving a lot of raw points just taking both of them, and you could even run it back with Marion Jones and just run all three Penn State guys and just get a shit ton of points. I've been really hesitant to take Marion Jones. I finally took him last slate, got into foul trouble against Cornell, and I thought, great, I finally take this guy at the elevated price, and he busts. But then the second half, he goes off and gets 31. One thing I've noticed about Marion, he either goes off in the first and then disappears in the second or vice versa, but he somehow always gets 30 fantasy points. He is priced up to 6'9", so that might take him out of the conversation for your main team, you know, but maybe not, because maybe he just doesn't have that GPP upside to go more than 4X, and you can just lock in those safe points because he takes enough shots. But he's clearly, you know, taking the role that I thought was going to be going this year to Miles Dredd. I would have bet money this year that Miles Dredd would have been number three, but he just hasn't taken the bull by the horns, and it's been Marion Jones. So those three are all in play for me. Stevens and Watkins are our main team near locks. I do still like my dude Isaiah Brockington. He has been a really nice value guy. His price is down to 4,500 after 22 fantasy points. It's usually a safe bet for 20-plus. Now, unless one of the guys like Dredd or Jones get into foul trouble, he'll be on the lower side of 20. Otherwise, he can get 25-plus. If he saw 25-plus minutes tomorrow at 4 or 5, he's going to absolutely smash his price. So keep Brockington in your scopes. he's definitely a guy that I want to have shares of. Wheeler, Herrera, Jones, you know, these other guys, even Dredd, who if I thought he'd be 5-1 this year, take a next step, I'd be all over. But I don't really want anyone else from Penn State. But the Penn State stack is alive. Garza is always, you know, in play for the tournaments if you want to go that route. I just have such trouble. I would assume C.J. Frederick is probably going to end up semi-popular tomorrow because he is priced under 5K. You know, we do have the players that hit the game logs hard. He's had three straight games of over 25 minutes, and two of those three has been over 27 fantasy points. So that sticks out a little bit. His price did go down to 4,900 after that game, which is puzzling. But keep in mind, Penn State's defense has looked really rock solid. They've given people problems this year, so I would not be surprised to see Frederick hit the lower end of his floor. You know, I think I would personally prefer to drop down 1K and take someone like Gaines and then use that 1K to get myself another stud. Kind of where my head is at with it. And then on FanDuel side of things, Garza the 8-4, that's fine. Stevens and Watkins both 7-6. I'm on those guys. Miriam Jones 6-3. Brockington 4-9, which is maybe a little bit higher there. And then, you know, you got Toussaint, McCaffrey, and Frederick. They're all just guys for me. Toussaint. And a good example of bad chalk, Joe Toussaint, that slate, it's like 60% on DraftKings. I think he ended up playing 3 minutes because we were ineffective. So I faded and I was a little bit lucky, I'm sure. But that's just a good example of where a guy who's unproven may get thrown into minutes and everybody starts talking and group thinking and, oh, this guy suddenly becomes a lock. It's a good example because of the fact that we're playing a lot of 2v2s and 1v1s and we're having full slates where, you know, you just aren't getting guys at lower percentages anymore. You can use that knowledge to say, okay, well, I'm going to back off that guy because I don't think he's actually that good or he's a little too unproven. He's going to be 60% or higher. Let me pivot to somebody else like an Isaiah Brockington who's going to be lower owned and has just as good a floor. So that's kind of how I've been trying to approach it, but obviously I provide information, so I give away a lot of who I'm going to play. It's just been a little difficult to get leverage this year. It's going to be a real test tomorrow to see on 10-game slate. If we all end up 2v2 on a 10-game slate, that's just I don't kind of out of answers at that point. Iowa, Penn State, what are you doing with this one, Russell?
Going to be using a lot. Even from the Iowa side, I personally don't know if that I'd be pairing Stevens and Watkins together, but I can't see a scenario where I don't have one of them in most of my lineups tomorrow. I like Miriam Jones quite a bit. I like him slightly more on FanDuel for cheaper. Brockington I'm a fan of. I will be using Jamari Wheeler in a lineup or two. He's said to be, you know, healthy, yet he got knocked out of the last game and only played 8 minutes. But the game before that, you know, he put up 22.5 fantasy points. So, and with them getting the kind of pace bump, I think he kind of fits in a little bit here and could be a little sneaky. With Iowa, I can't decide what to do with Garza. I really can't against Watkins. At his price point, I just don't know what the right play is. Right now, I'm leaning more towards not using Garza at all and maybe just looking to use some Frederick and then trying to decide if Bakari Evelyn is somebody that I want to use. Evelyn's the one that really stepped up in that Toussaint chalk game when Toussaint struggled. Evelyn stepped up pretty big. So I'm kind of intrigued there. This is a game I'm definitely going to want a bunch of. I just got to figure out what to do with Iowa.
Yeah, it seems like every week we're trying to figure that out with Iowa. But, there's so much good playable options for Penn State. Good call. Wheeler's been getting over 20 minutes. He just, with his usage rate, he just kind of falls by the wayside, especially if Watkins isn't in foul trouble. And I definitely understand the slight maybe concern of pairing him and Stevens, but like I said, every slate I find myself regretting not doing it. So there's a good chance that I'm going to end up just taking both and hoping that I get over 100 points. Villanova versus Marquette. This one is one I'm on the fence about this one. I think I want some, but I'm going to end up with not enough, and I'm going to regret it. KenPom has it 77-75 from Marquette. They're 17th in tempo rankings. Villanova 254th. Marcus Howard, as he usually is, ends up relatively chalky on most slates, and that's because he has a super high usage rate. He has a high shot rate. It's clearly his team. I find myself fading Marcus Howard more often than I take him because of the fact that he is so highly owned at the high price. It's burned me a few times, but the leverage it gives me, like on the last slate there, especially against Creighton, it was a two-gamer. It just gives you such huge leverage to bounce off, especially if, you know, like this game he's at home, so he's a lot better at home. But if he's on the road and a team like Creighton who has pesky guards that can, you know, frustrate him, their length and athleticism, it's just a really good leverage spot. And as I find out that more of the industry is on Marcus Howard, it just puts me off him more. And I usually can make up the points between him and someone else anyways, because I don't like paying 8-6 to 9K for him, unless the matchup is just super, you know, plus, major cupcake type of thing. But he hasn't been as engaged. You know, we need Saw to call in one of these times and give us the Marcus Howard breakdown. But some of the games I've watched, he just doesn't seem engaged. He ain't, you know, and I just find it to be more profitable fading him in the long run. I do really like the emergence of Sakara Nim, you know, priced up. I missed the days last year when he was like 4-7, and he was always like that last plug-in, and he could never get you, you know, more than 20, and some days it'd be 10. But now he's just kind of auto 20 to 25 fantasy points. So I do like him, especially at Villanova, because, you know, Jay Wright knows as well as us that Marcus Howard's going to take a lot of shots. So he's going to game plan for him, clearly. And that may leave a guy like Nim, you know, some extra looks or you know, less defensive attention. So I do like him for tournaments. I haven't been that excited about Kobe McEwen. He hasn't impressed me at all. Playing with Marcus Howard has to be difficult. Clearly, Housers are gone. So I think that has affected him a little bit. One thing that I have trouble with, and I've talked with Saw, is Brandon Bailey and Jamal Cain. Now, obviously, Brandon Bailey starts. So you usually want to lean the starter, but it is a case where if Bailey is shooting poorly or, you know, not as engaged or there's foul issues, then Cain comes in and will get minutes. And if Cain's hitting shots right off the bench right away, then he will get the minutes, and he's capable of putting up 30 fantasy points. These guys are both a big tilt. That two-game slate the other night, I had the absolute – I'm not trying to brag about a two-game slate or anything, but I had the absolute nut lineup – and played Cain over Bailey, and if I would have played Bailey over Cain, I would have definitely taken down the jam. And I just feel like that's going to be one of those things where, like, tomorrow it looks like Brandon Bailey, right, on paper, he's to play at 5-4. But it would not surprise me if Cain, you know, off the bench, knocks down a couple of triples, gets some rebounds, and suddenly he's up at, you know, 25 fantasy points at 4-5, and it's like, shit, I'm wrong again. So if I don't have to take either of them, I won't, but they're always on my radar. And Villanova defense hasn't been super elite as years past, so I definitely think that those guys are in play for tournaments for me, especially as a maybe a leverage play off the Marcus Howard chalk that they're potentially going to be. For Villanova, Robinson Earl at 7-9 and Sadiq Bey at 7-4 are not really real plays for me. They're both good, but, you know, 20 to 25 fantasy points for Robinson Earl at this price that he never goes down from just isn't going to get it done. And same with Sadiq Bey. You know, I know he has 35 in his bag, but more often than not, he's going to hit somewhere between 20 and 25 fantasy points, and that's just not nearly enough. Jermaine Samuels has dropped all the way down to 5-7, which is really interesting. As you see, his last four, he's been hovering right around 28 to 30 fantasy points. So that definitely puts me more towards him. If I'm going to take a Villanova player, it's definitely Samuels, because I expected more from him this year as well, and thought he would be more of the alpha dog, and he's kind of taken his step back. But now in the last four games, he's definitely playing well. And then Colin Gillespie at 7-1 is a little higher than I want to pay for him, but that son of a bitch, man. He is a guy that he's always breaking the slate. You know, he'll have a couple games where you forget about him, 20-25, that's Colin Gillespie's game. But then he's got these games where he's got 30 at halftime, and he's breaking slates, and it's just so annoying. And if he's going to be guarded by Marcus Howard, who we all know isn't that interested in defense, he could have a huge game tomorrow. So I'm certainly have my sights set on him for tournaments. As I'm building this five-stud lineup and I'm finding that lower 7K range is a play I need, I don't mind him being, you know, that last guy in. I'm certainly not mad about it. Not building around him, but I'll certainly, you know, play him if it comes to that. Samuels is a guy at 5'7", though, I have a lot of interest in. Over on FanDuel, let's take a look here. Da-da-da-da. Howard is 8'1", Gillespie 6'8". That's interesting. Bailey 6'5", to 6'8", on Gillespie. Like, you wouldn't play Brandon Bailey on FanDuel, I don't think. Jermaine Samuels at 6'4", so that's a little bit high. But then Sadiq Bey is at 6'1", and Jeremiah Robinson-Earl is 5'9". So on the flip side, I would be more inclined to play JRE or Sadiq Bey on FanDuel because their prices are flipped. FanDuel is doing a really nice job of reacting to prices based off performance this year, and they have an easier construction, where last year it was DraftKings. I still can't understand why this is happening, and I prefer DraftKings to have the last year's pricing, but it has definitely pushed me to FanDuel more as I get off on a tangent here. You know, maybe this will get more people playing on FanDuel, and maybe this will make FanDuel have what is called cash games. I don't know. That would be nice, and maybe it'll make FanDuel actually have late swap every single day. I see Eric, you know, tweeting them each day, asking them, you know, why don't they have FanDuel or late swap consistently, and they give them the, we're looking into it answer, of course, which is annoying. And it's just that FanDuel's product, I hate to say, is actually decent right now, and I've been winning at a pretty consistent rate on FanDuel, where last year I wasn't that good at FanDuel as I was on DraftKings, and now with the high variance on DraftKings and playing regulars, I just find the pricing model on FanDuel to be better, and I've actually started doing multi-entry on FanDuel, took down their 777 the other day, and I don't know, I'm just enjoying it over there. It seems like the pricing is easier, so really important that you guys, if you only play on one site, that's fine, but I would encourage you to actually look at it and see, you know, hey, this guy's priced to 8K on FanDuel, but he's priced 6K on DraftKings and vice versa, because that's what, excuse me, going to help you with your overall construction. Sorry about that. Are you, what are you doing here? Are you going to be having some Marcus Howard and what else?
I will have some Marcus Howard just because I don't know that he's going to be as high-owned as you might think, just because there are quite a few, you know, like I said earlier, there's 14 guys priced in the 8K range on this slate. I feel like his ownership is going to be lower than some of those other, you know, there are times where we get him where he's kind of like the clear top option, and then he just doesn't perform, or like that Creighton game, you know, where that game had a pretty high total. And Marquette put up 75 points in that game, but he still, you know, went for less than 26 fantasy points. It's just tough to ignore the fact that he can go out against a USC team and put up almost 62 fantasy points. You know, Davidson where he puts up almost 49, you know, where those games were back-to-back and he put up 91 combined game points between them. Like, I can't ignore that. And I think this is kind of the slate to go with him just because there are some other options that people want to pay up for, right? Like, you know, people are going to want to spend on, I guess it could be Peyton Pritchard later, Lamar Stevens and Dotson, Achiuwa, Nuora, you know, those kind of guys. So there are plenty of guys to choose from up there. So that's kind of why I'm going to be on him a bit more. I'll be on some Brendan Bailey just because I like the way he's playing. But, yeah, I'm with you with Jermaine Samuels as the guy that stood out immediately when I started looking at this slate a couple hours ago. So for Villanova, it'll be him and Gillespie on DK, Gillespie on FanDuel. And then I might take a tournament flyer on FanDuel on Cole Swider just because he's down to 4,300 over there. You know, and he's shown, you know, nearly 38 fantasy point upside on the season. Just three games ago, he went for nearly 24. So, you know, there's upside in his price over on FanDuel, even though his role is kind of hit or miss. But, initially this is a game where I thought for sure I would want to have a bunch of pieces, but I just don't like the price points on DK. You know, you pointed out Robinson Earl and his high price point and the fact that he's just not returning much. I don't mind Bay, but seeing Sakara Nim priced up so high, McEwen, you know, in the upper fives when he's really just had, you know, what, two games all year basically that would have paid off that price point, or maybe a couple more, but mainly just the Wisconsin game that really stood out. So, yeah, I think it's just going to be centralized between, you know, Howard, Bailey, Samuels, and Gillespie for me.
Yeah, makes sense. It's one of those games I think will dwindle. Like, I still think people will be drawn to Howard because that's just what happens, but I think the game overall will probably go under-owned, and it's going to be one of those regret fades on that game. But it's hard to roster them, like you said. It's much easier on FanDuel. Next game here, Florida State versus Louisville, 70-62 in favor of the Bills. They're 305th in tempo ranking, Florida State 139th. Man, let's talk about Trent Forrest for a minute. I really thought he would take a huge step forward in Dynasty. I was able to acquire him. I believe it was from you, right? And he's like 20 to 27 fantasy points, and he's just, you know, that's what he does. I feel like Forrest is going to – he's kind of sleepwalking a bit. They're getting their other guys acclimated. And then I honestly feel like when March comes around or, you know, the conference tournaments come around, he's going to just kick it into this next gear. Because remember in last March, he started really hitting some big games. I think he had a couple games last March, you know, over 30 fantasy points or more. And he was just a go-to guy taking shots at the end of the game. And it just kind of feels like he's not – operating at the top level that he can. I really expect more from him, and I when I watch Florida State games, I've seen three now, I find myself scratching my head wondering why he's not, and it's just, I don't know if he's trying to get the other guys, like, you know, Vassell and Gray and some of these new guys, Polite and stuff, you know, more time, more usage or what. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but I expect more from him. I would have thought he'd be up in the 7K, 7.5 range this year from what I expected. Vassell's looked really good. This is a matchup where I'm not going to be targeting most either team. I don't think, 62 total for Florida State's not that appealing. I do think, obviously, there will be a couple performers here that do well, but I'm not finding myself interested. You had mentioned Nora as being a guy that may draw some ownership just by name. That could be. He's not on my list at all. He's probably one of the last guys in that range that I'd be using tomorrow, and it's not just because he had 12 fantasy points against Kentucky. I think that's pretty irrelevant. I just don't see him having much more than a 4X marker in this matchup against Florida State. My guy Young KD, he's priced up over 5 now, so it's kind of, we're not able to really use him too much. He's still hitting right around 4X at that price. So it's fine, but I think I want to target him more in better matchups where I think I can return a little bit higher. There's several guys in that range, you know, Lester Quinones, who's 5'1", 5'2", that's probably got better upside. And then you could even go down to a guy like Brockington, who maybe gets a little bit more minutes. So it's not really a must to use him. Well, I keep waiting for Lamar Kimball to show out and assert himself against Kentucky. He did that. He played 29 minutes. I had 23 fantasy points, 12 points, 4 assists, 2 steals. Not a huge stat line, but Louisville's only going to go as far as obviously Nora and Sutton taking them, but they need guard play. It's well documented that in a tournament, to make a March run, you have to have guards that, you know, are capable of hitting throws down the line, capable of making a key pass, capable of hitting a big shot, getting a steal. You know, you have to have that. Mark Kimball transferred over. He was an absolute stud. He just hasn't, I don't know if there's another guy who's getting acclimated to the system, only playing at, you know, part of his capacity. He certainly looked like last year's Lamar Kimball against Kentucky there at certain points. It may be him, because it's not McMahon, it's not Perry, you know, they're going to be going to the Final Four. They need to get Kimball, much more involved. So at 3-7, I think he might be worth a tournament play here, because there's so much other value. Nobody's going to be using him, so it could be one of those, you know, jam or spin move or whatever the hell they're calling it nowadays, plays where you see somebody at the top with Lamar Kimball, you know, 25 fantasy point game. But other than that, I'm not really super high on them. I know Polite had a nice game the other day. I know that Williams is capable. MJ Walker's questionable. I believe he missed last game. Raekwon Gray is down there at 4'8". He's capable of having 20-plus, but it's really just for Florida State, Forrest, and Vassell are your two consistent players, and I don't think either of them are going to blow the doors off the slate tomorrow.
Do you have a strong feeling for either of these teams for tomorrow?
I don't mind the Florida State guards. Like, I think Florida still offers us a decent floor cash-wise, even in a slightly tougher matchup, just because we've realized, like you pointed out, the guard play for Louisville just hasn't been all that great. And then we know what Vassell has for upside and athleticism. But I really like Nora just because, you know, one is ownership, I think, gets there just from name value. And, you know, we're talking about a guy that was a preseason player of the year candidate or, you know, up there with, like, Cassius Winston as, you know, one of the few favorites. And he just put up a complete dud against Kentucky. You know, the players like that tend to bounce back after, I don't know, you could even call it being embarrassed, I guess, you know, just with the way that he played. And we also get him at a price drop, right? Like, now he's at the lowest price he's been at least since the middle of November. I don't remember what his price was to begin the season, but this could conceivably be the lowest price of him all season long. So I like the bounce back spot for him, especially being at home. Like, if this would have been on the road, like, I'd have some worries for Louisville, but with them being at home, this just seems like one of those spots where, you know, 35 seems like it's likely out of him. Just kind of the way I feel in this spot. But other than that, like, I don't like the guard play, like you pointed out. Malik Williams always is interesting to me just because I think he's a safer play than, like, Enoch is. Enoch can go off, right? Like, we've seen him go for, you know, 37, but we've also seen single digits out of him. So I'm probably just limiting it to Nwora and then the two guards from FSU, depending on what I'm entering. If I'm in a larger field GPP, you know, like the Jam or whatever it is, I don't know that he has the upside for this slate at 6,500.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, because it's just, you know, 25 fantasy points just seems like what he is right now, and it may change as we get closer to March, because I don't think we're seeing, like, peak performance Trent Forrest and what he's capable of right now. All right, let's move on. That's a good point about Nora, too, with the bounce-back spot. As far as ownership goes, he goes a little under the radar because people do tend to look at last game. West Virginia versus Kansas, this is a game that I am more interested in than I think most people will be. Just the Big 12 games have been fun so far. KenPom has a 74-65 for Kansas. They're 112th in pace. West Virginia 60th, so they get that pace boost. Right away, you know, I don't want to be paying 8-3 to 8-4 and 8-5 for Devin Dotson, but I just am tractor beam towards these players who, when I look at what they've been doing, you know, at worst is a 30. Which is pretty much the absolute worst I can get at 8-3. You know, he had a pretty bad game against Stanford, all things considering. They whooped Stanford, no problem. You know, and he got some free throws at the end and some steals at the end that juiced his numbers up. But he had a bad game and still had 30 fantasy points. I think he's going to be much better. You know, West Virginia defense has kind of been hit or miss. They have two really good rim protectors that have foul issues. One of them is going to have to deal with Azubuki, the other one McCormick. So those four players may end up canceling each other out. They may get into foul issues. It may be tough going down there. So Dodson's going to have himself a lot of jumpers. He's going to have an opportunity to get to the free throw line a lot as well. So I really like him just in that regard. Also the guards on West Virginia, you know, they're a bit turnover prone, so there's some steal upside for him. You know, and this maybe it's a game where Dawson's assists are somewhere between 3 and 5, not great. But I think he's going to score 20 real points. So I am very comfortable rostering Devin Dotson again. I think he may be a little underowned considering his price and the plethora of options around him. You know, Garrett's back playing and healthy again, so some people might think that takes away from him. And Aruna and Moss. Moss was hitting a hell of a ton of shots last game. So maybe there's a lot going against Dotson. The general public, you know, won't be on him, but he's a very strong play tomorrow. Somebody that I am actually building around most likely. So I like Dotson. Azubuki, like I said, I think he gets canceled out. I think McCormick gets canceled out. Garrett at 5'5 is really interesting. He had some price points earlier this year where he was like 6'5 and what, 6'6, which is really high for him. Now he's down to 5'5 coming off a 26 fantasy point game and looking healthy. He's a guy that does have some foul issue, gets a little bit handsy, but he's very aggressive and gets a lot of steals, so that's why. But he contributes in all categories. So 5'5", you know, him and Jermaine Samuels are in that mid-range 5K to 6K range that if you're going to go with the balanced approach, I think those are two guys that can cornerstone your lineup and not torpedo you and double ups get you that 4X marker you're looking for. Agbaji is a nice tournament play. Shea Agbaji, I have him in a couple other dynasty leagues, not the main one that's the high stakes, but a couple. And he's another one of those frustrating guys that he can get you 45 fantasy points if he's feeling it and, you know, he's getting rebounds, but then he can also be very passive and get 18 to 20. So really depends on which Agbaji is going to show up tomorrow. The minutes are there, and you'll be able to tell right away if he's going to be passive or not. This is a pretty big game. You know, it's at home. I feel like Kansas wins this one. I don't want to say relatively easy, but I don't think that'll ever be in doubt. Maybe the score is, you know, within 5 to 8 points at all times, but I don't really foresee Kansas ever, you know, being in trouble here. But I love Dotson tomorrow. That's my dude. For West Virginia, you know, I just said Culver and Tshiebwe, I think, are going to get canceled out. They're both over, you know, 7-3 for Culver is no. 6-6 for Tshiebwe is decent, but I don't think I can pay that either. Haley is a guy I usually always end up fading. He rarely seems to pay off that price. Matthews hasn't taken the step forward we thought he would. It really seems like it's becoming, and McCabe also hasn't taken a step forward. He's regressed a shit ton. Miles McBride is a really exciting player. When he gets hot, he's just, you know, he never meets a shot that he doesn't like, and he can hit it from any spot on the floor. So I really like him for tournaments. In borderline a cash play, I think if West Virginia was at home and the 5-2 tag on McBride, which makes no sense because he was almost 6K just a few weeks ago, you know, he's in that price point where I'm considering him for cash game slash main team because I like his upside. And then if you want a tournament punt, you can go with, you know, Gabe Osabuon if you think that, you know, the other guys are going to get in foul trouble, but for the very same reason those guys are going to struggle, he's going to struggle, and he has a high foul rate, you know, capable of getting 15 to 16 and paying off the 4-2 tag, but you might have your butt puckered, you know, all the way because there's another value that's probably going to get there a lot easier. He did have 31 minutes last game because of the foul trouble for the other guys, so it's very possible for him to get those extra minutes and get you the 4 or 5X at the 4-2. So keep that in mind. He is fine for a tournament play. I certainly wouldn't use him in cash or main teams, though. And like I said, McCabe, I don't know. When's the transfer coming from McCabe? Because it's not working out for him. What's the deal with Kansas, West Virginia, my man?
I'm definitely with you on Dotson. But my other favorite Kansas player is McCormick. Reason being is, you know, generally his minutes are all over the map, right? Kansas tends to let the other team dictate what type of lineup they put out there. I just think he's going to have to be on the floor a lot more, you know, with Osabuon, Culver, and Tshiebwe. Like, I just feel like he and Azubuike are going to have to spend time out on the floor together. And he's shown just massive upside when he gets a bunch of minutes, right? Like, and his foul rate is not very high, you know, considering he's a big man and dealing with everything and his minutes are so hit or miss. So he's actually safer from fouls than Azubuike has been. So I think I really like him for GPPs. I can't do it for a cash or main build team. But he's just kind of my GPP play on this slate just because I think he sees more minutes than we're used to seeing from him. West Virginia, somebody can pay off. I just don't know who it's going to be. I think I have to make a handful of lineups before I start including a West Virginia player. You know, it could be one of those forwards paying off. And like you said, McBride as well. But if Culver or Tshiebwe is able to stay somewhat out of foul trouble, certainly one of those two can grab enough rebounds, pick up a block or two, and score down low enough to pay off. I lean towards Tshiebwe just because he's
he's dropped in price a bit. So if he can stay out on the floor, I think he does have a decent shot at a 30. But I can't trust anybody on West Virginia. You know, they're going to play like, I don't know. I think they have the deepest roster in college basketball. I feel like they play like 22 guys every game.
Yeah, it kind of seems like it. Another name to maybe look at is Silvio D'Souza. If Ogbuki gets into foul trouble, and if he gets into foul trouble, D'Souza, you know, could see some additional minutes, and he's got really nice rates. 25% usage rate when he's on the floor, and a 36% combined rebounding rate. So D'Souza has a definite upside there as well, but kind of a hard game to trust West Virginia, like you said. All right, let's move on to the next game here. Auburn versus Mississippi State. KenPom has it 70-69 in favor of Auburn. 114th in tempo ranking, Mississippi State 327th. Now, this is one of the glaring pricing errors. For some reason, DraftKings forgot to price up Nick Weatherspoon. He is still 3K. He will be massively owned, as he should be. Start all your lineups with Nick Weatherspoon. There is no leverage to fading. There is no reason to fade at all. Just continue to roster him in every lineup build that you have. In fact, if you went him, you went Gaines, and you took the shot at Mariel, you really have free reign to roster whatever five guys that you want. So Weatherspoon, obviously a lock. Reggie Perry up there at 8'7". Auburn's a really tough defense. I know Mississippi State's at home. At first, I thought with the value that I was going to be all over Reggie Perry. I love him. Saul and I have loved him since last year when he's a McDonald's All-American and he was, 3K, 4K. No one really used him, and we saw the upside, and now he's kind of grown up. It's hard to pay that, though, against Auburn. I think he has an opportunity to be a really nice tournament play. But I don't know that we can use him in our main builds because Austin Wiley and, the end plethora of forwards that Auburn has to throw at him might give him some trouble. With Weatherspoon back, it's really hard to pay, these prices for Tyson Carter and Robert Woodard, 7'6 and 7'2. They're not guys that really interest me. I do like them both as players, and I like that Woodard's price is starting to come down from the 8K it was, but he needs to be more like 6K. Maybe 6'5 at worst for me to start considering to roster him again. You got Abdul Addo there if you want to roster him at 4'7 for tournaments, but kind of just has a floor of 2. But if he stays on the floor and doesn't get in foul trouble, he's got ceiling of 25, maybe 30. And then it's hard to roster Molinar and Stewart for them too with Weatherspoon back. They have a lot of guards and they kind of cannibalize each other. If Weatherspoon was what he should be priced at, he probably wouldn't even be a look. But he's 3K, so for Auburn, it's going to be a struggle for me not to want to have Austin Wiley shares because his price is at 7'4", so we have peak price here, but he just does so much in the 20 minutes that he plays. 20 to 25 minutes is really all he's going to play. He's just 30 fantasy points. If he ever had the conditioning or the need or, any possible way to pay like 30 minutes or more, he would break every single slate with his usage rate and his rebounding rate and block rate. You give him 35 minutes in, these projection systems, he comes back with, 50 fantasy points. It's just not going to happen, unfortunately, but, he's just a guy that's really safe. I prefer him at home, obviously, so this is going to be a tougher matchup. Auburn doesn't have a lot of games on the road this year. They've had a decent schedule. It's been soft, though, and I think that's the main reason why they haven't lost. So this will be a good test for them to see where they really stand. I think Austin Wiley is a fine play. I think maybe ceiling-wise is lacking in GPPs, but I think you could overpay the 7-4 a little bit on your main team and still lock in a 30 fantasy point game. But there is risk for fouls on the road with him, so you have to know that. Okoro's fine. McCormick, Doughty, Alt, Purifoy, McLemore, all these guys' prices are up over 5K, 6K, and 7K. They're all fine plays, but they're priced where they should be. In fact, Doughty should be even cheaper, and McCormick, I'd like to see him come down a little bit too before I really use any of them. The ninth game on paper, I like the SEC game. It should be fun. There is also overtime potential here. How are you attacking this one?
I have to kind of think about the Perry versus Wiley matchup a bit more.
you know, because I do like both players. It's just one of them most likely gets into foul trouble. So I kind of have to decide between them. I do like Woodard a little bit just because he does quite a bit of rebounding at times for them. And I think he's going to need to do that against all those forwards that Auburn can run out there. But then, you know, kind of outside of those three guys, maybe Purifoy, who, you know, he kind of had a bounce back game last game out, going for over 32 fantasy points. You know, so he's shown his upside recently. But other than that, I think everybody's priced up a little too high. You know, like Tyson Carter with Weatherspoon back is still in the mid sevens, and he's basically done nothing the last couple games. And like you pointed out, Doughty and McCormick are just up there. And even Okoro, who's extremely talented, but paying the mid-6Ks for him, I wouldn't be all that excited about it, I guess. I think he's an all right play, but I don't get excited.
Yeah, because he's very well probably going to hit, you know, what, 25 to 30 fantasy points, which is good. But on this slate, I think you need a little bit more there for the 6-5, and if you're going to build like a balance, because I don't think also you're going to fall. If you're running those value guys, you're going to find your salary at the 7-5 to 8K range for all these other spots. So I just don't think there's going to be any need to really go down and hit him there. Will you have any lineups without Nick Weatherspoon on DraftKings?
No. To me, there's no point in not plugging him in. Now, like, if they still mispriced him and he was maybe, say, 4,500, you know, like, he's priced up more, but he's still not to where he should be. Like, I could see the argument to fade just because a bust at 4,500 has a little more weight than if he were to deal with foul troubles or just get injured or something at min price. Like, it's still not going to hurt you all that much.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's good. I wanted to bring that up because there's a lot of people who like to, you know, game theory fade and, you know, at what price point you do it. And it's just, it doesn't make any sense at the 3K to do it. Last game on the slate, and they could have left it off, honestly, but it's fine. They have, it's included in the afternoon slate too, Oregon and Utah. And we have three that are on, I'll circle back and we can kind of talk about the FanDuel games that are on, that aren't on DraftKings. Oregon versus Utah. KenPom has a 75-69 in favor of Oregon. They're 301st in pace, Utah 186. I do think Oregon bounces back here and doesn't get caught slipping. It kind of seems like now that Justin's healthy, now that Dante's available, Walker's, you know, he looked very bothered last game. I think I saw on Twitter maybe he's carrying a questionable tag. But they've got all these bodies available now, and I don't think that Altman has them. Now he has all his toys available. I don't think they're – they haven't had time to really gel and play together. You know, when they didn't have those guys available, Pritchard and Dorte and Mathis kind of had free reign to do whatever they wanted and shoot. And then you saw there a couple games stretch for Richardson as well. And all the big men, you know, Walker kind of just got his rebounds. Lawson was just kind of a guy. Okoro does nothing. So it's kind of just space takers, and the guards and wings just did whatever they want. Now you have a true talent, you know, potential pro player in Dante, and a really good guy in Justin who will probably go pro in Europe, who are going to demand touches. And it seems like Oregon didn't have enough basketball to go around last game. I only watched the first half, but they looked really confused about who was going to take what shot and where they were going to be. Now, Altman's a great coach. He's going to get them where they need to be. They're probably going to bounce back and hit and smack Utah in the mouth, I think. I'm not going to blow them out by any means, but I think they'll win. And it's just going to be about maybe prioritizing and letting guys know, here's your role, and kind of figuring it out. Because Justin's coming from a situation where he was a top dog, and now he's more like the fourth or fifth option. Dante's probably been, you know, top dog his whole life, and now he's not. And you know, it's Pritchard's senior year, so it's kind of tough, you know, figuring out who's going to get the ball and who's going to be, you know, the primary option. Now, with Utah, it's really easy to figure out. Timmy Allen has had an amazing breakout year, man. We knew last year he had it in him. You know, there were some games where he would pop 40 and then other games where he wouldn't. That last game against Oregon State where he had 42 fantasy points, he had a really slow – this was the game that I was cracking up on my Slack chat. 5 minutes in, he had like
four fantasy points, and everybody was jumping off the cliff. Oh my God, Timmy Allen's busting. What am I going to do? I can't win. I kind of took a breather and stopped for a while, and I come back and I see he had 42 fantasy points, and they've definitely been learning from me, because that's my special move to tilt early. He's a really good player. Oregon's front court is definitely good, but I think at this point I may have to dub Timmy Allen matchup proof, because when you go through his logs, he's faced a myriad of opponents, some easy, some tough. You know, the BYU opponent that didn't have their best big. You know, Kentucky, he had 40 on them. SDSU is a tough team. He had 30 on them. Oregon State, you know, they're a good team offensively, defensively, not so much, 42 on them. So he's a really strong player against whoever. I think he's a really good GPP play, because I don't think he's going to get enough respect tomorrow. I think he may be, you know, on people's player pool list, but as they're fanning out their main teams and you know, kind of constructing their lineups, I think Timmy's going to be a guy that ends up lower owned than he should be. Rylan Jones looks like a middle school baller, but he's really good. We know he has 30 fantasy point upside. I don't really want to target him against the Oregon guards. Pritchard is a steal machine. They do a really good job handcuffing guys, so I could see him struggling. I do think this may be a Boost Gotch game where, you know, we saw last game he had 27 fantasy points. He had 17, 6, and 2. I think he's going to do a fair bit of rebounding in this game. You know, he's been getting over 30 minutes. His price has come down to the 6K range after he was pushing almost 7. Earlier this year, I think he was even 8 because of that stupid game where Utah scored 180 points or where the hell it was, and they were all priced up. They're finally starting to come down a little bit to playable options. So I do like Gotch here. Batten, I'm not a big fan of. Carlson is okay. I'm kind of interested in Michael Jennington. At 4'8", he seems like a decent GPP play, but it's kind of just, you know, I don't want to force a hammer. I'm a big proponent of having hammer exposure. I just don't want to force it for any reason. So I like Allen. I like Pritchard. Those are two guys that you could obviously run out with confidence. What do you think, Eric, about the Oregon front court situation? Like, Enfali Dante is 4'5", you know, so he's right on that line of he could hurt your lineup with a bust, but he also carries a lot of upside. So is he just a tournament guy for you? Because the minutes haven't quite been there with Houston, but this seems like a spot where maybe he could do well.
I don't know. At this point, I might just have to play the wait-and-see game with him to see him actually do it. You know, because he's committing fouls at a high rate too. You know, even against, you know, in against not tough teams, you know, he's committing those fouls. So I don't know. With all those guys vying for minutes, I guess I don't know that he has enough upside on this slate for me at even 4,500 because of the value we've seen below that price point, right? So, I mean, I just don't know. Like, Okoro was basically non-existent in the last game. You know, against Colorado, he played 10 minutes and did absolutely nothing. I wouldn't be shocked to see C.J. Walker sit out this game. And then that would open up some more minutes for Dante, but I actually think that opens up minutes for Chandler Lawson as well, who's played actually pretty well the last couple of games. But in this game itself, like, for me, I like Richardson just because he's shown the ability to do quite a bit. He does a little bit more than Mathis does. So I'd rather go with Richardson. And Pritchard for sure. I'm with you on Timmy Allen. I do have a little worries just because of all the different big bodies that Oregon has as far as forwards that they can throw at him. But do you think, like, Peyton Pritchard looks at Rylan Jones and just sees himself from 3 years ago? Like, these two players just remind me of each other. You know, Rylan Jones is just
a
baby-face-looking freshman. You know, so, like,
yeah.
And Pritchard just, as a senior, still looks like he's, you know, younger. But I guess they just kind of remind me of each other. And I think that's just a bad matchup for Rylan Jones. Probably a pretty good matchup for Pritchard. So I think Pritchard's going to be very close to being in my main team at this point. I have to play around with more construction yet to see. But I have been targeting guys against Utah just because they don't seem to have the same defensive setup as they've had the last couple of years. So You know, that part of that comes with some new guys coming in, and I just don't think Batten plays, you know, all that great defense or anything, so they can exploit some areas on the floor.
Yeah, I totally agree. All right, let's circle back around now to FanDuel, which has the Creighton-Butler game. KenPom has that 72-63 for Butler. They're 338th in tempo. Creighton 169. Creighton's been a really fun team. I've had a ton of success using them in DFS so far. I've just been running out Zagorowski and Alexander at home. They pay their extremely high prices on DK every home game, it seems. I do worry about using – I mean, in this game against Butler, obviously they're kind of a no-fly zone. But especially on the road, and you'll notice as the season goes on, Tyshawn, for whatever reason, just seems to disappear on the road. When he's at home, though, he's an assassin. Denzel Mahoney's price is up over 5'8". When it's DraftKings last slate, he was like 5'5 or 5'6". I think it might be time to kind of pull back from the Denzel Mahoney train a bit until the price either normalizes or his minutes normalize. With them being healthy, he's just, you know, he didn't get in last game until like the 13-minute mark in the first half, and he did pretty decently. But the rotations after that were like 3 to 5 minute spurts, and he's kind of a little bit at that price line where I need to see more. For Butler, you know, Kamar Baldwin's I think he's dealing some ankle issues right now. Bryce Enzi, because otherwise Baldwin at 5'9 would be a huge play, right? Bryce Enzi had a nice game last game, but and Creighton is really bad inside, as we know, so I could see him actually have a nice, you know, GPP game where he grabs a ton of boards, maybe Golden. Sean McDermott is down there as a nice play, so I kind of like the Butler side of things here. Baldwin, if he plays at 5'9", is that like the lock of the century right there or what?
I just, with him dealing with an ankle injury, he didn't practice yesterday. You got to think, even if he plays, he's not going to be all that explosive. You know, but I guess if they come out and say that he's good to go or, you know, he's looking great in warm-ups or whatever, then sure. Like, you know, on the surface, 5,900 is just way too cheap for him. But I guess ankle issues, you know, are tough to deal with, especially the first game or two back. And, you know, add in the fact that he's going to be dealing with, you know, Alexander and Zagorowski and, you know, those guards on Creighton are pretty active as well. I don't know that it's an ideal spot for him to play through an injury, to be honest.
No, that's a good point. It's something I'll have to be monitoring because I am playing FanDuel more. They do have the late swap tomorrow, which is nice. So at least it's the first game, so it'll be a real decision because I saw that price right away and I thought, wow. But yeah, the ankle, it's one of those situations too where even if he plays, he might mid game re-injure it. You know, ankles are tricky, and then you're screwed. So it is tough. Virginia Tech versus Virginia. I don't think we have to really talk about it too much. KenPom has a 57-51. In favor of Virginia. They're 353rd in pace, Tech 324th. This game is just screams fade. Virginia they've been struggling a bit when another team can score. So I don't think Nolley's a horrible play in general for this game. I wouldn't pay the 7K, but it wouldn't surprise me if Nolley or Radford, who's been coming on, was it Couture or even, you know, B or PJ Horn start hitting threes. Because Virginia hasn't been able to keep up with teams that can score. And Tech has shown earlier in the year, they haven't been on the slate in a while, so people might have forgot, they can actually score points. They're a very streaky team. I know Eric Haslametrics or whatever it's called, he's actually got Virginia Tech on there within like 3 points. So it might actually be decent to take Virginia Tech. I know they were like +7 earlier today on certain sites. Might behoove you to take a bet on them because I can see them actually keeping this one close. But otherwise, fantasy purposes, is there anyone that we need to be looking at here, or is it pretty much as it looks and fade?
I mean, I'm still going to look at the three guys for Virginia, DeKite, Clark, and Key. I think Key really, you know, has returned from his injury, you know, kind of was eased in the first game, and then all of the last two games is combined for 54 fantasy points or FanDuel points wise. So I like his ability to kind of pick up steals and blocks and kind of do everything on the floor. Clark just seems safe at 6,200. Even, you know, even when Virginia's struggling, he's still in the low 20s in terms of fantasy points, and he's coming off of a 32 fantasy point game. So I just think, you know, kind of like I said a lot last year is, you know, Virginia's used to playing in these games, so their players are putting up their fantasy points in these games already. So, like, nothing really changes for them. You know, so I could see two of the three of those guys kind of paying off for sure for cash-wise, you know, for 4X or a little above 4X. But we know that each one of those three can go for 30 to 35. You know, they've done it this year even with while the team struggled. So it's really those three, and I kind of agree with you on Nolly or Radford. I do think one of those two could kind of surprise against Virginia defense. I have trouble trusting Couture, who's kind of shot really well the last few games. But I guess if you know if he's knocking down threes, he can certainly pay off as well. I have trouble seeing him getting a bunch of peripherals against Virginia, ultimately.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And then last game here, Kentucky versus Missouri, which is another looks like a probably an ugly game. Kentucky 226 in pace, Missouri 285. Nick Richards is the guy that at 5'7", I looked at this game that I saw right away that was interesting to me, even against Missouri. You know, their guards are pretty aggressive and can force turnovers, but the interior is just, you know, not that great. Tillman, we know, fouls out a lot, and he's actually a GTD with a foot problem right now, so I don't think there's anybody inside that's going to be having a fun time with Richards and maybe even Montgomery, who I have real issues taking Montgomery because of his fouling. But Richards has really broke out this year, so I think he's a pretty solid play on FanDuel at 5'7". Sassine is a nice tournament play at 4'5 as well. I'm kind of looking at the Kentucky forwards. And then for Missouri, maybe, you know, a little bit of Drew Smith for tournaments. I know he's 6'7", but he's been really good. Javon Pickett at 5K is interesting. He's had games where he gets hot, and Xavier Pinson at 4'3". So more of the Missouri guards and the Kentucky forwards is what I'm kind of looking at here. What are you doing here?
I'm trying to figure that out. You know, like we know Missouri for not being, I guess, an overly talented team. They do a good job of kind of mucking things up. We know Tillman obviously commits those fouls, but we know that Kentucky guys can commit fouls with Richards and Montgomery. So when it comes to choosing between Richards and Montgomery, I can never get them right. Like, I guess the only time I can get them right is when one of them misses a game. And then we just jump on the other guy just because. But I'm kind of with you. I kind of like Sestina at that price for GPPs. You know, he's got pretty strong upside. And this could definitely be a spot where he's kind of used over, you know, where Montgomery and Richards might not see the floor together just because especially if Tillman's out, Missouri just might not have a ton of size and they just might run four guards. And I know Sestina's a forward, but he can still deal with some of the bigger guards on Missouri. Missouri-wise, I think I might just use Mark Smith as a GPP guy. He's kind of gone 5X his current price, like three out of the last seven or eight games. And then I think you still have to consider Hagans as a cash play, right? Like, I mean, we could probably spend a half an hour talking just about Ashton Hagans, right, last year and this year. You know, how we always fell for him at 5,200 on DK. Just look at his consistency now. You know, FanDuel pricing wise, it's 30 plus fantasy points in each of the last, 10 games. And then, you know, he's basically at 30 the game before that as well. So he's just been ultra consistent. And his steals numbers are just, you know, are through the roof. And he's assisting and doing everything. Like, so if we don't have Tillman inside where he can just kind of pick up the assist to Richards and Montgomery and those kind of things, I think his floor is just so high that we have to consider him cash-wise on FanDuel and, you know, maybe in the $25 that only has, I don't even know what it is tomorrow, 14 or 19 entries or something. He's somebody that just seems ultra safe at this point, which is, you know, last year we would have never thought we'd say that about Ashton Hagans.
No, when he's picked to be a first, you know, preseason first team All-American, I think almost all regular CBB DFS players laughed and said, yeah, right. And to start the season, you know, it's like, haha, yeah, right. But you're right, the last 10 games, he's another, he's kicking into another level. And I have to admit, I've been really impressed with him. I still have these kinds of issues, like paying 7-8. There's not, I mean, cash games on FanDuel are kind of hard to come by anyways, but 7-8 for Hagans is really a difficult thing for me to still grasp because of how bad he hurt me and others last year. But you're right. It's hard. You know, you look at the last 10 games, he's clearly hitting 30 fantasy points and you know, paying that tag off. So I certainly don't mind using him. I think if you have salary left over, because typically on FanDuel, I find, you know, I go down and I get the obvious value and then I start plugging in guys like Nick Richards at 5-7. And then I've got, you know, an average of 7K to 8K for these last couple spots, and I usually fill my studs last on FanDuel, I've noticed. So, if you know, if he ends up being the last guy in or I got a guard spot for 7-8 and I'm looking around, yeah, I have no problem playing him now. And I never thought that would actually be the case. So, good stuff. I think we've covered pretty much everything. So, appreciate you calling in. I know it's late for you over there. I'm sure you got lots of lineups to build. So, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. We'll try to get on earlier next week and then try to do maybe a couple, three or four shows starting next week if you're down for coming on.
Sounds good to me for sure. Yeah, most of the time this isn't too late. You know, I just sometimes I have to try to catch up on sleep, and I had done a lot of my writing for the slate earlier to get it out of the way. But once you kind of posted that you're going to be jumping on a show, I thought it might help me just because I've been kind of going with the struggles on DK similar to you. And I know talking to Scott, he's kind of been in the same boat where DK hasn't quite been as nice, where FanDuel has been really nice to the three of us over the last, you know, week to two. So being able to come on and talk might help me figure out what I'm doing wrong on DK right now as far as roster construction or, you know, get me back to basics ultimately. And I know we talked about doing that a lot last year where shows kind of helped us refocus, especially when it came to creating main lineups.
Yeah, definitely. And it's always good to hear someone else's, you know, thought process on things as well. So I appreciate it, man. Best of luck tomorrow. And I'm sure we'll be talking here before lock.
You too. Good luck to everybody else out there.
All right, see ya. Thank you very much to Eric, as always. Appreciate all you that listened live and are currently listening on demand. Thank you very much. Definitely be available on Twitter. Like I said, if you get into our Slack chat there on RotoCurve, I'll definitely be available all times for that. Eric's got the DFS Army page that he writes for, so lots of good content out there. Let's slam a Saturday slate. Hopefully there's some football money out there. Good value, some top studs. Let's have a good slate, guys, and report back on the next show saying that we won lots of money. All right? Thanks again for the support. Take care.
Yeah.